The bottom line is, I'm not going to sit here and say this is only one-tenth of it. We understand it's a big game. But in the same breath, if we come out and put all our effort in and get this win, and then next week we don't get that, we're in the same spot. Because the records and the ranking committees don't care who you beat. They just care about your win-loss. So if you look at it that way, it's usually not too tough, especially in a sport of football. We don't play 40 games. We play 10 that were guaranteed. And I think our guys will be ready. I think last week a lot of people would have said maybe they're looking ahead and it's a trap game. But I think we proved last week that that wasn't the case. And I think if you come watch us play next week versus Augsburg, you'll say, wow, I'm pretty impressed with how they rebounded from a big emotional win.
It's Coach Glenn Caruso as his team victorious St. Thomas over St. John's 27-26 in overtime in the arch rivalry game between St. Thomas and St. John's. But yes, there's a lot of football season left. So even though there were a bunch of teams that got big wins, big for conference consideration, big for the top 25, big nationally, there's still a lot of football to go as we welcome you to the Around the Nation podcast. For the week of Monday, October 4th, 2010, I'm Pat Coleman.
And I'm Keith McMillan.
And just a great week of football all around. Keith, a lot of the big games, of course, that we're going to talk about centered around the West region. So we might as well start with that and start with the Tommy Johnny game. On the D3 Hoops side of the house, we refer to the big rivalries by the winner first. And although the Tommy Johnny game has been kind of informally called the Tommy Johnny game by everybody, for years and years, St. Thomas finally earns it with a W next to their name for the first time since 1997.
Yeah, exactly. It's not only been since 1997 that they've won in the game, but they hadn't won in Collegeville since 86. And the past couple seasons, really, in particular, had been close calls. And we feel like St. Thomas was sort of getting ready to make that leap, but they couldn't get over the hump against St. John's. And they cut it awful close on Saturday.
And it looked like they were at times that they were going to try to give it right back to St. John's again for a third consecutive year in a close game. St. Thomas blew three chances, not all in the red zone, but all inside the St. John's 30 in the first half. Then in the second half, after it got to be back and forth a little bit, St. Thomas took the lead. St. John's came back and scored to take a lead at the beginning of the fourth quarter. And then St. Thomas... Ben Wortman, who had been out for a week plus, did not play at all last week against Concordia Moorhead, ripped off a 40-yard run to start the first possession of the fourth quarter, and then on the very next play from scrimmage, a fumbled exchange on a reverse, and Fritz Waldvogel couldn't handle the football. St. John's came down, took a lead 20-14 on a 32-yard field goal. That was the last kick that would be, I guess it would be considered a no-brainer for the rest of the day, as everything after that was nerve-wracking, questionable. St. Thomas drove down a 13-play, 68-yard drive to tie the game 20-20, and then Tim Albright's extra point attempt kicked off the right upright. St. John's came down and was driving, looking for a chance to win the game with a field goal with under 2:30 left. They got the ball with 3:27 to go. And then Ryan Dietz came up with a big play.
Well, you know, they had about a minute left, and they were driving on us and expecting to run, and it came out with a pass and kind of just reacted on it and made a diving grab. And, you know, we game planned for it all week, so I was excited to make the play.
As a defense, did you guys feel any extra pressure on you guys after the missed extra point that could have given you guys the lead?
No, we always trust the offense. You know, we believe in them, and you know, we knew if we did our job, they do their job in overtime. So we were just trying to hold them off.
In overtime, it was all Ben Wortman on the St. Thomas side. He had three rushes for 25 yards. The nail-biting extra point attempt was good, and then St. John's came back. Joe Boyle with a pass out of the backfield to running back. And then hit running back Steven Johnson again for a 6-yard touchdown pass as Johnson dove for the end zone, got in, and then Jimmy Mattson's extra point attempt hit off the left upright. Final was St. Thomas 27-26, and about 1,000 to 1,500 Tommy fans rushing the field at St. John's after the win there.
Pat, what I think is interesting about this game now is, you know, even though it was a nail biter for St. John's, and this is now the second time they've lost a game they very well could have won. Remember, they lost in overtime to Wisconsin Eau Claire. They're now 3-2, Pat, and you talk about there being a lot of season left. they're already, you know, we're halfway through the schedule, but they're already going to have to hope for some help. First of all, they have to help themselves next week when they play Bethel, which is sort of quietly 4-0 in the MIAC. And then maybe on October 23rd when St. Thomas plays Bethel, they hope for a little bit of help and start looking at a three-way tie picture or something of that nature. It has happened before. You know, you don't have to go all that far back to find a year where St. John's has won the conference with two overall losses and a loss in the conference. But certainly when you have a chance to help yourself, you know, and you get that overtime game or you know, a chance to win it late, and even if you feel like you've been outplayed a little bit or whatever the case may be, you know, those are the ones that sort of come back to bite you. And I think in the case of St. John's, now being a two-loss team, looking ahead at the playoff picture, it's going to be they have a little bit of ground to make up.
16,421, the announced attendance in Collegeville on Saturday. One of the biggest crowds in Division III history. There's no official Division III single-game attendance record, but St. John's has led Division III overall in attendance for years and years. And 16,421 for a not-rounded number is about the highest number I've ever seen for a Division III football game. But Keith, I wanted to ask you, as a guy who's played in one of the big rivalry games in Division III, but always on the last week of the season, can you imagine after if you took a tough loss to Hampton-Sydney sometime in the middle of the season in front of a overflow crowd, coming back and having to play next week?
You know, we had a situation when I played where we would play Emory and Henry, which was our toughest challenge, in the middle of the season, and when I played for Randolph-Macon. And if we would lose that game, it would be very tough to turn around the next week and play, because you felt like you were not out of the conference race, but a step behind in the conference race. And that is sort of, you know, if your mind is focused not necessarily to the rivalry, but to winning the conference. Now for St. John's, you know, they have to find it in themselves to figure out a way to stay motivated and say, okay, this can happen. This can still happen for us if we play well. We got to get to 8-2. We have to finish the conference slate with one loss, and then we'll hope for Bethel or somebody down the line to beat St. Thomas, and then we'll see how the three-way tie works out. But I feel like that's even more than playing your big rival in the middle of the season, feeling like your dream, what you set out for at the beginning of the season to win the conference, get into the playoffs, is now unlikely.
St. Thomas turned the ball over four times on the afternoon, three of them unforced, three fumbles you know, just in the open field untouched, and one interception thrown by Dakota Tracy. And St. John's on the other side on offense, they looked about as good as I've seen them on offense in a couple years. Joe Boyle, 16 of 24 passing for 168 yards and a touchdown, and he ran the ball really well. Eight carries for 55 is what he ends up with. A loss of 10 on a sack takes a little bit away from a nice day, including a 12-yard touchdown run at the beginning of the fourth quarter. That's the one that gave St. John's its lead back 17-14. But again, it's St. John's falling to St. Thomas 27-26 in overtime. Another big game in the West region is the Linfield-Willamette game. And this game, Keith, didn't have anywhere near the drama. It wasn't out of hand early, but it was certainly out of hand in the second half, a 35-7 win for Linfield.
Yeah, the interesting thing about this is that Willamette outgained Linfield in the first half, 213-190, but they trailed by a couple touchdowns at halftime and weren't able to get back in the game. You know, Aaron Boehm had a great game for Linfield, ran for three touchdowns, passed for a couple more, and then Linfield, you know, they sort of held the ball in the second half. They figured out, all right, taking this 21-7 advantage into the third quarter, we're gonna figure out how to dominate the clock and not let Willamette get back in this game. And now Willamette sort of moves into that group with St. John's, where you have the in-conference loss and another out-of-conference loss, and may be a playoff-worthy team, but is going to have to get a little bit of help to get back in the picture.
Yeah, Keith, I'm trying to figure out how many two-loss teams, how many 7-2, 8-2 teams is it going to take being out there for one of them to get a shot this year after the way they were all snubbed last season?
Yeah, you know, I don't know what it's going to – how it's going to shake out. You know, there's been seasons where all the 9-1, you know, one-loss teams lose in Week 10 and Week 11, and then all of a sudden two-loss teams are sitting pretty. And then there's been other seasons, as we talked about in earlier podcasts, like last year, where 9-1 team gets left at home. So – you know, there's really only one certain way to get in, and that's to take that automatic bid. And anything after that, you're sort of playing with fire when it comes to your playoff hopes.
Yeah, the teams that launched yesterday still could get their automatic bid, as you mentioned earlier, Keith, but they need to win out and they need to hope for a little bit of help. Wisconsin-Eau Claire, on the other hand, is a team that still has its conference championship hopes in front of it. Of course, it has to face Wisconsin-Whitewater and beat Whitewater to do so. But on Saturday, Joel Sweeney got back into the swing of things. The freshman running back, 28 carries for 109 yards and five catches for 120 yards and a touchdown, including the 16-yard pass in overtime to get the Blue Golds past Stevens Point 20-13 in overtime.
Yeah, and again, another team that in an overtime game, you know, game could have gone either way, was able to figure out a way to win, and now they are they're in the playoff picture. They're hanging on to it and bounced back nicely from the loss to North Central last week. And Stevens Point now has lost to Willamette, lost to Wisconsin-Eau Claire. You know, two very good teams. Both of them will be in or around the top 25 for most of the season. And then they still have to play Wisconsin-Whitewater. So for a team that came in, you know, with pretty big hopes this season, I think of being, you know, maybe the second team in the WIAC, you know, they're the only team to have beaten Whitewater in the regular season, the only D3 team anyway, the only WIAC team to beat them in the past few seasons. They're going to have to do that again just to hang on to their slim playoff hopes.
The Mount Union Ohio Northern game. Now, I haven't had a chance to watch it on my DVR yet, but I'm trying to figure out how Mount Union goes from allowing 28 points to Wisconsin Oshkosh in week two, their opening game of the season, and then just comes out and not just shuts out Ohio Northern, but completely just obliterates them defensively. 9 first downs on the afternoon, 85 yards through the air, 9 for 24 passing, and that's an impressive turnaround in just a few weeks' time for that defense.
Yeah, and it's probably not too much of a stretch to say this team's been coached up since that first game. You know, probably the best. I mean, at least, you know, the most successful head coach in probably college football history. Certainly, someone who we've seen Pat in doing this since 1999 make in adjustments mid game, mid season. You know, change whether it be, you know, changing the play calling or putting a different guy at quarterback. He just. Larry Karras has a sense for what his team needs to do to win, and obviously they figured out Ohio Northern yesterday and were able to implement it. And you know, Pat, you mentioned some of the defensive numbers; they were also pretty impressive on offense. The 27 points probably doesn't even paint the entire picture. 25 first downs, 60% on third down, 12 of 20. You know, 20 of 33 passing. Just they only sacked one time. They didn't have a lot of trouble in this game. And you know, when you put a number 8 team in the country against a number 2 team in the country, you feel like, all right, maybe this is going to be, you know, a game that could go either way. You know, there's no real favorite. And certainly Mountain Union has made a habit of just sort of obliterating the teams in its conference. And it probably goes back to coaching and having the book on these teams. And even if Ohio Northern was able to come up with something new, it seemed like Mountain Union had an answer for it. 38 minutes time of possession on Saturday as well.
And continues to show the gap between the top two teams and the rest of Division III. Also, maybe a bit of a changing of the guard in the backfield for the Purple Raiders on Saturday. Zach Lemon put the ball on the turf a couple times earlier in the season. Wes Ryder got 19 carries for 102 yards. Jeremy Murray got 21 carries for 94 yards. I saw Murray play in the in their opener at Oshkosh, and he was used more as a receiver out of the backfield. But I really liked how he moved with the football, and he got as I said, 21 carries and a pair of touchdowns for Mountain Union, who improved to 4-0. Elsewhere, you know, this is a game that happened a little bit later in the evening. So if you're on the East Coast or not a night owl, unlike me and Keith, maybe you didn't catch the details of this game. But let's talk a little bit about the Cal Lutheran Redlands game and how that shook out.
Yeah, I mean, Cal Lutheran, another team that was in a position, you know, with a loss and an early season win in that non-conference schedule, where, you know, they didn't want to fall behind in the SCIAC race at all, and Redlands is their big challenge. And just like in the Johnny Tommy game or Tommy Johnny game, whichever you want to call it, they had that big game right off the bat for them, and came down to Redlands having the ball last with their sixth year quarterback Dan Selway with the ball, driving Redlands into field goal position, and had a chance to win it with a pretty long kick, and Cal Lutheran was able to block it. And coaches will tell you over and over again, you know, there's three phases to the game, not just offense and defense, but special teams, and special teams can win a game for you.
Selway finished the day just 16 of 42 passing. Keith, I know neither of us actually saw the game, and we only listened to the audio, but I was just, I guess I was surprised that Redlands went for the end zone three times from the 23-yard line, didn't try to pick up a few yards here, a few yards there, and set themselves up with a little shorter field goal. In Division III, you know, a 40-yard field goal is no gimme for almost anybody. I think even if you would put Jeff Shebler out there for a 40-yard field goal to win the game, I'm not sure that I would have given him more than a 50 or 60% chance of making that kick. Did it seem unusual to you that they weren't trying to cut that 40 yards down to 35, 34, 32, something like that?
Yes, but it's easy to second guess
sure.
from hindsight and not seeing it. You know, it could have been a situation where, you know, where they ran some plays with some short routes and Selway just saw somebody break open deep, and there's no harm in taking one shot for the end zone or two shots for the end zone. There's no harm in taking a shot at the end zone if you make it. But if you don't, you do leave yourself a situation where you have to make. It's a long field goal, as you mentioned, in Division III. Redlands has a pretty good kicker in Joe McMillan, someone who, at least they were saying in the broadcast, makes kicks from that distance in practice pretty regularly. So, you know, you can feel confident, but also, as they said on the broadcast, that's why you don't want it to come down to a kick, because anything can happen. But the guy may not even get the kick off. And they said it was a low kick. Cal Lutheran got their hands on it and preserved the 24-22 victory, you know, without even waiting to see if the kick got all the way, if it was long enough or if it was wide left or right. You know, it certainly you can go back and look at the play calling and say, hey, maybe we should have you know, tried to get another first down or just tried to make it, you know, take 8 yards off this thing. There's a game that just jumps into my memory where a team did that. It was that Johns Hopkins, Thomas More playoff game where they only had 5 seconds left and they ran a quick play. And it only took 4 seconds, got out of bounds and gained like 8 or 9 yards, and then made a very long field goal to win a playoff game. And, you know, sometimes that's a smart thing to do.
That's a play call that took Johns Hopkins from a one and out type team to a final eight. And that enabling them to help them make that kick. Three games on Saturday, Keith, where these are either a ranked team or two ranked teams, but really just kind of the first salvo in conference races. And I'm thinking of the Illinois Wesleyan Wheaton game, and then also St. John Fisher Utica and Randolph-Macon Emory and Henry. These are all, you know, games where there's a lot of conference left to be played and a lot of teams that are still very much in the race in each of those leagues.
Yeah, I think in the CCIW, maybe more than the other two, and the other two certainly leagues where the several undefeated teams and you know, like you said, the first salvo is just getting underway. There's a lot of season left in the Empire 8, in the ODAC, and in the CCIW. But I think even more than the other two, the CCIW with six unbeaten teams, you had to get ahead first, or rather you don't want to be one of the ones that falls behind. And Illinois Wesleyan on Saturday lost to Wheaton 29-19, and actually was trailing in that game quite a bit more. They scored 12 points in the fourth quarter to make it more interesting. But you know, North Central crushed Carthage, and Millikan and Augustana had a little bit of a surprise result. Augustana beat Millikan, which was one of the unbeaten teams, so now that CCIW picture clears up a little bit, and this may be a conference where a team with a loss wins it, but it's certainly beneficial for Wheaton and for North Central to be out in front.
The difference between last year and this year for Illinois Wesleyan, Brian Rooney came off the bench last year in the relief of the injured Craig Ladd and had a great game against Wheaton. This year, 11 of 25 passing with 4 interceptions, which helped Wheaton build that 29-7 lead and then hold on for the 29-19 win. Keith, you know, tell me about your feelings on the ODAC, especially with Macon kind of taking it to Emory and Henry to start off, and then, of course, still having certainly Hampton-Sydney down the stretch, and Bridgewater's not has played some decent games this year as well, and of course, everybody else they haven't played yet.
If you're a Randolph-Macon fan, you probably have to be as optimistic as been, you know, before I played, maybe going back to the, in Randolph-Macon history, 1984 is their one really, is the best season, and they lost to Washington Jefferson in the playoffs. But this is probably a team that's at least from what we've seen early on, seems better than the playoff team from a couple years ago, and maybe even better than the conference championship teams in the 90s, and beating Emory Henry, coming in 4-0, leading 15-14 at halftime. Certainly a big score for Randolph-Macon. The way they did it, too, was you know, their star receiver, Earl Peoples, only had 2 catches at halftime. He finished with 10 catches. So we talked about the adjustments when it came to Mountain Union. And Pedro Aruza's staff at Randolph-Macon figured out how to get Earl Peoples involved in the second half. And Randolph-Macon actually opened up a 34-15 lead, so they scored the first 20 points of the second half. And they also switched from their main running back, Thaddeus Scruggs, to another guy, Drake Sanders. And he had a pretty big second half, scoring a couple touchdowns and going over, I don't know if he was right at 100 yards or over it. I'm not looking right at the box score. But, you know, when you're able to run the ball, control the clock, it keeps that defense honest, and then you can sort of bring your star receiver back into the game. And for Macon, you know, when you look around the ODAC, Hampden-Sydney sort of, they're 5-0, but they're scraping by their past couple weeks. And Bridgewater, same thing. You know, they're still unbeaten, but not necessarily blowing teams out. And Randolph-Macon won every game by at least double digits. They certainly have to feel pretty confident. But as the theme of the podcast states, Pat, a lot of season left.
Now, let's talk about the Wittenberg-Oberlin game. We spent a fair amount of time on Wittenberg's close road win last week. And this, you know, I know Oberlin is having a really good season offensively. You know, they've got a veteran starting quarterback who's done a lot of good stuff for them this year, Joey Zabalian. But, you know, at some point, you talked just a moment ago about Randolph-Macon, and I'm putting words in your mouth, but in the ballpark, blowing out teams they're supposed to blow out. Wittenberg is clearly not doing that. I'm not saying they were supposed to blow out Allegheny last week, but, you know, let's be honest with you. Oberlin hasn't beaten Wittenberg since 1954, and this is the first time it's been a less than a double-digit game since the conference got put together. What do we take away with this game on Wittenberg again, second week in a row?
Yeah, there's two schools of thought on this, Pat. One is that, you know, you win, doesn't matter. Nobody's beaten Wittenberg, and they should be happy about that. And then there's certainly another school of thought where you look at Wittenberg, you know, a top 25 team, in Oberlin, a team that's, you know, historically struggled even in the North Coast. 23 first downs each. You know, Wittenberg outgained them pretty well, 466, 264. But Oberlin had 13 penalties for 118 yards and was still able to be in this game in the fourth quarter. And, you know, Wittenberg wasn't a case where they jumped out to a huge lead and then let Oberlin come back. You know, it was a 7-point game most of the game. They did go up 27-14 at the end of the third, and then Oberlin scored with 4 minutes left. But Oberlin had a chance to win this game, and that's not something you expect to see from the number 6 team in the country. You know, when you go up a couple notches, you start talking about Wesley, Mountain Union, Whitewater, they don't have those lapses in the middle of the season, and it's hard to say it's a lapse when it's a win, but they don't have any trouble. You know, if they do have trouble, it's a quarter or a half, and they finish a team off. And if you're going to be one of these elite teams that's going to last and is going to want to challenge, you know, Whitewater and Mountain Union for a spot in the Stag Bowl, you're going to have to play consistently every week. And Wittenberg, it seems like, you know, again, you know, not being at the game, but seeing the past two games and seeing the scores and knowing the quality of teams that they're playing, it's just sort of stunning to see these escapes by them.
Wittenberg was ranked 7 last week, this past week. With number 8 Ohio Northern losing, I don't know if Wittenberg would drop another spot based on the way that the Tigers played on Saturday, but I guess it's certainly possible. You guys will know the top 25 by the time you hear this podcast. The voters are still voting at this time. We're recording this on Sunday. One other game interesting that I wanted to talk about was the Case Western Reserve Allegheny game, and this is a, you know, we just talked about Allegheny and And we talk about Case in a minute again because Case is playing at Oberlin next week, and all of a sudden that game looks a little bit different. But Case and Allegheny was a exciting down to the finish game as well.
Yeah. A point after blocked in overtime, and that's sort of the theme of a lot of the big games this week. Getting down to overtime and or getting to late in regulation. If we talked about that Redlands-Cal Lutheran game, there's situations in these games where it comes down to a kick, comes down to a play on special teams, comes down to something that happens in overtime. It's such a thin line between winning and losing, and by extension, it's a thin line between being in good shape in the playoff picture as we reach the halfway point in the season, or sort of having to play from behind and hope for a little help.
The Allegheny got to overtime in the first place after a 76-yard fumble return for a touchdown and then a two-point conversion, which tied the game up at 17-17. Allegheny has, you know, had a pretty good kicking game the last couple of years. Ryan Ziff is pretty good on mid-range field goals in the 30s and high 30s. He did kick three field goals on Saturday, but it's the extra point that was blocked that ends up being the final margin, and I think the thing that people will remember out of this game, at least as long as they remember it. I don't, with Case playing Oberlin next week, who knows what happens to Case. I think you and I were both, I don't want to say down on Case, but we knew that they were not going to be as good this year as they had been the last few years with a veteran Dan Whalen and a quarterback. And now, I'm not quite sure what to make of next week now.
Yeah, and that's sort of the fun of this point in the season, where you have some data and you feel like, all right, this team could be a little bit of this, and then you still every week to week is so different. There's surprises every week, and that's sort of the fun of it. I think the way Case approached it, and they said this when we had a story on them for kickoff, was that they don't have the star quarterback anymore, but they've been a top program in their region, in their conference, for 3 years now. And if you're not getting your program better, deeper by recruiting and all that stuff, you're bringing the level of everybody up, and Dan Whalen's certainly a big part of that by getting them to the playoffs and giving them extra games, extra weeks of practice. But at some point, all those guys, you have to deliver with all that extra practice and a boost in recruiting, and you build the program deeper. Those guys have to come through for you, and it they're undefeated at this point, so we can't argue with it. But certainly, you look at Allegheny pushing Wittenberg last week, pushing Case this week. You don't know, is Allegheny that good, or are these teams just struggling to beat a sort of middling conference team? Pat, looking ahead to next week, you talk about that conference season. A lot of things can happen for Mary Hart and Baylor. They had to hold on against Louisiana College. They were in a back and forth game this week and held on 42-38 with an interception in the end zone in the final minute. And it's just it just doesn't stop in the American Southwest, because Mary Hart and Baylor, beats Hardin-Simmons 42-28, beats Louisiana College 42-38, turn around and have to play Mississippi College on Saturday coming up now, and that's the team that that won the conference last year and joined Mary Hart and Baylor in the playoffs. So nothing easy for the number five team, or the team that was, I imagine they'll hold their spot, but they were number five going into this week. And then a couple other big games going down the list: St. John Fisher and Ithaca in the Empire Eight, and Fisher, they are off to a really solid start. I mean, they haven't played hardly the first four results. Nobody was even close, and those were games that weren't even home games for them. So their schedule, as we mentioned in a few podcasts, is sort of set up for them. Got a pretty good challenge from Utica. I wasn't expecting it to be as close as it was. 35-24, Fisher won that game, and it was actually 21-21 midway through the second quarter. So it was sort of a game that was back and forth for a while, and Fisher was able to sort of not really even dominate in the second half, but hold on, get ahead, and they actually needed the whole fourth quarter to hang on to that lead, 35-24. I think Fisher is in, they're in good position, but the way Ithaca's played too, they've given themselves, I think, some pretty good challenges in the non-conference schedule, with playing Union, playing Lycoming, which is who beat them. They're pretty well tested for a 4-1 team. That's basically a Lyco field goal away from being 5-0 coming into this game. This may be the toughest test that Fisher has, and we're going to need that clarity in the Empire Eight picture because we got three teams, St. John Fisher, Alfred, and Ithaca, all undefeated, and then Springfield, Utica, both 4-1 with one conference loss. So that's going to be a fun race to watch.
Of the teams that won the big games on Saturday, it's St. John Fisher and Mary Hardin Baylor who have the toughest road ahead this week. The other teams, other games going on this week, Mount Union had a big win on Saturday, and they face they go to Marietta for week six. St. Thomas had the big win at St. John's. They host Augsburg. Linfield with the big win against Willamette. They host Puget Sound. Eau Claire with the win against Stevens Point. Now they go to Wisconsin-Platteville. Wheaton with the win against Illinois Wesleyan. Now they host Elmhurst. Cal Lutheran beat Redlands and now hosts Whittier. So and then Randolph-Macon with the win against Emory and Henry, and they host Catholic. So each of those teams has a little bit of an easier road coming up. Also, Willamette, after the loss, they get to face first-year Revive program Pacific at home on Saturday. Also, North Central Augustana mentioned earlier that it'd be a big game in the CCIW. Ohio Northern will face Capital, and if Ohio Northern had a challenge against the Mount Union offense, holding them to 27 points, they're going to face a team in Capital that scored merely 60 points on Saturday in a win against Heidelberg. That and other games going on down the schedule. Check back at d3football.com all week. He's Keith McMillan. I'm Pat Coleman as we wrap up the podcast for Monday, October 4th.